Welcome to the Analytics of Dynasty, a daily podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. I wanted to dive into a little series here on the coaching changes. So we're going to talk about, just to give a look-see at what we know about new coaches, how they might affect offenses in particular, and a little preview of some of these teams by, look at some of the situations that might be going on in the offseason. Again, with the new coaching staffs, with the new GMs in particular, right, where there's both, there can be a lot of change. And I think that as we sort of look through these, some of these teams, in particular Miami, we're going to talk about first, could be big players in the market in terms of particularly free agency and going forward. So it'll be interesting to see sort of where this all plays out. So out Brian Flores, that story well documented in Mike McDaniel. Interestingly, San Francisco is going to benefit again from a minority coach being hired to a different team. Mike McDaniel, his father was black, is black, and that goes along with, Martin Mayhew was hired from San Francisco last year as a GM, so they got picks there as well, and I believe Saleh qualified too, if memory serves there. So a bunch of assistants becoming coaches. That's good stuff from San Francisco, so that's good for them. It's interesting. Miami doesn't benefit from it other than hiring their coach. They don't benefit pick wise, which is interesting. The incentives there are certainly interesting in terms of how that's all working. Do you incentivize actually hiring the coach, or do you incentivize building, basically hiring a deep bench of coaches to be hired from? It's an interesting incentives question there beyond the pay grade of AOD, if I'm being totally honest. San Francisco ranked second lowest in design pass rate at 51.6% last year under McDaniel. Now, McDaniel was the running game coordinator, basically, and he was the OC, but he was not a play caller. So I do think that's an interesting question and how that transition goes. So that'll be something we'll watch for. We've seen a little bit of success here. Zach Taylor, Cincinnati's coach, was not a play caller, coming from the McVay scheme that had some success. That we've seen Matt Nagy coming from the Reed tree, who struggled, I think. There's a mixed bag here, and I don't think there's anything you can particularly take from it. It by all appearances, Mike McDaniel is a smart guy, so I tend to give credit to. I tend to think that these things maybe aren't as complicated as we want to make them out to be. It's not easy, but let's give the guy some credit and be able to put together a good system here. He was part of putting one together, and taking the jump to being a play caller. Seems like it should be something that he is capable of doing. So not super, super worried about him making that transition. So San Francisco was the second lowest rate of design passes, 51.6%. They're 20th in plays. So, below median pace, below median, tempo, and a really run heavy scheme that's very much towards the running game centric approach, right? We talked about in the Elijah Mitchell podcast, talked about how they don't run a ton to their running backs in terms of routes and the like. So I think it's going to be an interesting system, and I think in particular how Tua fits in it. So again, run heavy and kind of slow pace last year for San Francisco, where Mike McDaniel was. I'd note the year prior, so it would have been 2020, they were like top 8 in terms of plays. So that can be a little fluky and not necessarily entirely predictive year over year. So just note that as well. Can be a lot of variance there. By contrast, Miami ranked 4th in plays per game last year at 65.6 and 16th in design pass rate. So again, that's a positive pace and basically a neutral game script, if you will. So gives the benefit to a guy like Jaylen Waddle, right? That's a very fertile territory for a guy like Jaylen Waddle to have some benefits of. And I think it's interesting because you look at these, you could make it more complicated than this, but I think a lot of it blends together. Last year, despite having more volume in the passing game more volume in the passing game and more just outright play volume altogether, Miami ranked 28th in yards per attempt at 6.4. They ranked 27th in receiving touchdown rate at 3.4%. Again, that's fluky year to year. Listen, they were number one in play action at 35.9% of their passing plays, but only 7.6 yards per attempt. Again, there was a good improvement from play action, from non-play action to play action, right? That it was a net positive, top half of the league in terms of improvement, which is good, right? You want to see improvement on that. You get the opportunity to take some shots and the like. However, just not a ton of ceiling there. That's definitely a concern. So only 7.6 yards per attempt on play action. Not enough there to really, to really take advantage of that edge. So I think that's a big spot we could see, even if volume comes down a little bit in terms of raw passing volume, I think that there's probably still some work there that can be done in terms of optimizing the pass. When you see how, and there's proof of concept, right? Second in yards per attempt last year for San Francisco, 8.6 yards per attempt, 13th in touchdown rate, 5.1%. Again, that's fluky, is one of the things that I would say. Eighth in terms of play action rate, 28.4. So not as play action heavy, 35.9% for Miami last year, 28.4 for San Francisco. However, there's a big difference in terms of yards per attempt. 10.2 last year for San Francisco, 7.6 for Miami. So again, that's a big, big jump. I think some of that stuff, scheme stuff, some of it's probably personnel stuff as well. Does Miami have a George Kittle, Brandon Ayuk, Debo Samuel fueled offense? No. They have other pieces that I would say are poorer versions of that. However, I still think that there's plenty left on the bone to potentially get out of that. And I think one of the key things that we're going to see here, probably one of the big stories, will be this offensive line space. This offensive line, they have the most cap space in the league here, heading into free agency. And they're 30th in pass block grade at PFF. 32nd in pass block grade, 30th in rush block grade again. So lots of opportunity there to add to that offensive line. I think that's probably going to be a big deal there in terms of their plans. Free agents, notably Gesicki, Durham Smythe, Jacoby Brissett. They probably want to add a quarterback, maybe someone in line, that has some experience with that San Fran offense, would be what I would potentially expect there. Albert Wilson, Mac Hollins, Philip Lindsay, Salvin Ahmed is an exclusive rights free agent, so I expect him to be back. Duke Johnson, Malcolm Brown, Will Fuller. So we'll see there in terms of, I think there's a good chunk of that could be changing. I think it's basically a fait accompli at this point that Mike Gesicki is going to be a franchise tag. You're going to get, he's going to, there's some argument here that could be the potential wide receiver. I don't think that's going to be the case. I think it's going to be, he'll be a tight end franchise tag. You have to really be a wide receiver to get tagged, to go from tight end to being tagged as wide receiver is basically the way the rules have been outlined and interpreted. So I don't really expect that to be that's going to be something that people talk about in February and March because they've got nothing better to do. But I do think come the time that the franchise tag's done, he'll get tagged as a tight end, and it's not going to be an issue. What it's curious to me is they haven't extended him. So, and does this? He's not Kittle, right? He's not Kittle. He's a good player, but I think he sort of lacks in some of the pure physical aspects of being a tight end. He's more of like a schemed open, kind of gets what's there for him. Doesn't do a ton more beyond that, which I think Kittle's basically a lot more than that. So it'll be an interesting, situational fit, how they see that fit. One name I think to keep in mind, Hunter Long, the backup, the tight end there, was drafted later in the draft last year. He's a name to monitor. Again, I don't if they let Gesicki play out a franchise tag or something like that, it's gonna be a couple years down the line. I will also say, I think that there's a research project that I do want to get into later on in the season is watching some of these guys. Basically 2 or 3 years down the line, you think of Tyler Conklin, you think of Dalton Schultz, guys that were, fringe-ish rookie picks, who then get to a spot where it's 2, 3 years down the line, they sort of stayed on the depth chart, they developed a little bit, and there's an injury in front of them, and they can capitalize on it. Robert Tonyan, another one, right? Those types of guys. I think that's a really interesting thing. I think Hunter Long, maybe, not maybe it's not this year, but maybe next year even. That he's in a better situation. So I do think that's a trend to potentially watch for. And maybe we don't get so far into those guys in rookie drafts, but it's sort of we recycle them later on, and basically work our way back to them. So I think that's, goal one would probably be to figure that situation out in terms of how it affects us. Goal two is definitely the offensive line. There is an opening here at running back, so we'll see how that all unfolds. But I do think there's lots of potential to address the O-line position, and there's a lot of potential to a lot of need for it, and they've got the space to do it. You could see, bump multiple guys at it. This is a situation you don't need to necessarily throw superstars at, but I do think, like, hey, lots of investment sort of across the board can really lift, and you're trying to avoid having a bad spot necessarily than have all superstars. So, and then your last one is Tua's development. I mean, this whole scenario is going to rise and fall on Tua's development. I think it's a possible chance that a guy like Watson is still in play. So we'll see there. I would think that they're probably players, but I'm not sure. Ultimately, sort of where that situation will unfold, that'll be something we'll be watching for. I would think it's going to be a sooner rather than later type deal on the Watson front, and what implications that could have on a guy like Tua, for example, I think it's a big deal. So, all in all, I'm pretty optimistic about the McDaniel hire. I know there's been some analytics questions about him. I don't necessarily have a ton of concerns about that. I don't think that Shanahan tree is all that friendly to analytics, would be the thing that I would say. The some of the play calling stuff doesn't is you know the fourth down stuff doesn't really affect fantasy, I don't think. So I think that people can get sort of over their skis on that, and it's not something I'm super, super worried about. So, all right, well, that'll pretty much do it for this beginning of the series. The Miami Dolphins new coaching staff, they haven't, as of recording, officially hired an offensive coordinator, so that'll be one last thing to button up. But it does look like this Mike McDaniel is going to be the key guy there to watch. So I'll be looking for that here going forward. And until next time, continue embracing the variance, and we'll talk again very soon.